And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
And a feared here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nations, Phoenix.com. Yeah, okay, that was a good one. All right, Donna's working on getting Karen Katowski on. We went long with Noah from Decentralized Thought on YouTube. And I tell you what we're going to be working on next time. It seems like, to me, what's going to be important is going to be exchanges. Where it doesn't matter how great and wonderful your currency is if I can't exchange it for when I need it to go in and out of whatever and some kind of... But sooner or later, you're going to need to do cash. And that's where they're coming after the local Bitcoin guys and the providers and so on. But it's so... Are we going to try and get her... Oh, okay. So Donna's working on Karen Katowski is our next guest, so she's working on that. What we're gonna go ahead and do is make sure that Noah is ready for the next show that we do is going to be on exchanges. I can see that is the linchpin for a lot of this stuff, and I'm sure a lot of other people do too. Now. You go, yeah, well, these guys are trading this and they're doing kind of making money. The value, where is that value? Where is it? U.S. dollars? Is it silver? See, my thing was I was looking at Bitcoin when I first got, it was like, I think it's 16 ounces of silver per Bitcoin. Then once it hit 150 ounces or two, I stopped keeping track anymore. I go, okay, so it's outperforming, you know, whatever. It's still, wait, what's 3,600 done? Where's my phone? Okay. Let me do the math here. What is Bitcoin at now? Let's say 3,500 or whatever. I don't care. You know, 3,500 divided by, let me open it up here. Go to my calculator. Oh, there she is. She wants, I got to get the right thing. Boom. All right, we'll get to her in a second. Got to do the math. If you're Karen, you're there, Karen, hold on a second. You know, because I already got on to something here I was doing. Divided by, say, 15. 233 ounces of silver per Bitcoin now. And I was getting it when it was 16. And I'm going, but I kept it in terms of silver. So when are we going to start doing that? These exchanges, that's what I'm looking for. You know, the exchanges. Because it doesn't matter if you can't exchange it. Well, that's what we'll do with Noah. Let's check. Karen, we got you?
Yes, we do.
There we go. Good. All right. One thing I want to make sure that we get on is that it's been... Donna, go ahead and come and do the pictures. The one thing that I wanted to make sure is that we going into a third world war. I mean, we just skip right to the end, man. We're going to have the economy's going to take a dump. We got China and Russia going, you know, and, you know, I know Donald and Putin are wanting to be buds, but they can't on the stage or kind of, you know, they kind of look at each other. Well, I wish I could give you a big hug, but that wouldn't look good. And, you know, kind of, you know, so what's really going on? Is there tension in Ukraine and Crimea? Is that between Donald and Putin, or is that the deep state versus we want to sell some Russian missiles? What's going on? Help me out, Karen Katowski, retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, former Pentagon officer and professor, and she's going to help us. Go.
I don't know if I can help you that much. It's getting complicated. It's getting very complicated. I think one thing that you can always fall back on is the people need to, people, the people that the deep state or whatever you want to call it. I mean, they're about money. You know, they're probably very interested in your Bitcoin to silver ratios there. You know, they sell arms. We sell arms. That's what we do. I mean, part of this ending of the INF treaty or the backing out of it that was just talked about this week. You know, that's coming because they want to sell arms. They want to upgrade. They want to sell. They want to deploy. Threaten war. I mean, these are the things that maintain the modern state. You know, the fear that and the false patriotism. You know, it's I think you can always have that fallback that it's about arms sales. Ultimately, I can't. You know, certainly not about security. I mean, fundamental security is not being served by any of these things that are going on.
You know, before we get to the end of this segment, I apologize we weren't able to get hold of you right at the top here and give you a
That's my fault. Sorry.
Proper introduction. But, yeah, I just started earlier. I gave you like a minute, you know, we're finishing up the previous hour. But the award that you got here recently, the 2018 Sam Adams Award goes to Karen Kotowski. And tell us about the Sam Adams Award. And it was at the showing of Shock and Awe, Rob Reiner film, you know, about the Knight Ridder journalist. I'm sorry?
Yes, I'm sorry. It's my grandson's in here.
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't know anything about it either. Yeah. So the film, Shock and Awe, I mean, it's been released, but it's been shown very few places. I mean, I haven't seen it anywhere, you know, in terms of any theaters. Even the small theaters aren't even showing it. And it's actually it's a pretty fair movie. It's an entertaining movie. And it really focuses on the Knight Ridder guys who I worked with back in, 2002 and early 2003, while I was still in the Pentagon. And so they make this movie about their about some of their key characters and reporters and editors and that trying to find out the story, which, of course, they were on the right story, but it was being spiked everywhere else, basically.
Well, what was the story that they were going at?
Well, the story, which bits and pieces were floating around even then, was that, of course, this intelligence that was being quoted about Saddam Hussein having been part of 9/11, having had weapons of mass destruction that were imminent to be used, and even that he had them. You know, this was all bald-faced. It was falsehoods. It was made-up stuff. And they suspected it. There were bits and pieces in the media suggesting that this stuff wasn't true, wasn't solid, was politicized. And they were chasing after that story. Was this intelligence politicized? Of course it was. We know that now. And they had some sources. They had a couple different sources. They had sources at CIA. They had sources in State Department. They had sources around D.C. And they had me in the Pentagon. And I was one of their sources. And so they doggedly pursued this story and actually reported it, but then faced huge criticism by mainstream media, of course, huge criticism and punishment by the government itself. I mean, you know, the politicians itself, you know, how terrible of you to suggest that the government might be lying to you about war. And then, of course, within a year or two of that invasion in the spring of 2003, it was all revealed to be that they were 100% accurate, that their sources were 100% accurate. And in a sense, they were vindicated, but really it's kind of sad because it didn't change anything. It didn't stop the war. It didn't end the war, even after we found out it was all falsehood. I mean, because at that time, you know, stuff's invested.
So, you know, yeah. I think I saw this. You know, I'm looking at the trailer we're playing. Yeah, I did. Okay. Yeah, this has been out a while. I think I saw this, God, almost a year ago.
Yeah, it came out. Well, it apparently was made last year. It won awards in Europe. It won awards in, I think, Spain, film awards and that kind of thing. And then it came into the release, American release, in the summer, this past summer. And so there was a little bit of news about it, and then it pretty much disappeared after that. I mean, you know, I guess the government's still sensitive about its lies.
Oh, well, this is, you know, the truth always comes out, but by then, truth delayed, truth denied, It doesn't matter. We'll see what matters. We come back. Karen Kotowski and grandson. We'll be right back. Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary. I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find. How old's your grandson?
He's almost three. Yeah, we've been watching him for a little while, a couple, 3 weeks. Let me go get my husband to get him out of here, though, because I think that'll help. Hold on a sec.
Help get LRN.FM into more ears. Visit promote.lrn.fm for a free bumper sticker, flyers, banners, graphics, and more. Promote.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're back. Karen Kotowski, we're going to be yakking about... the current situation and geopolitics and the G20 just happened. We have her getting an award. We talked about it. It was at a screening of Shock and Awe, Rob Reiner's film that's been out. I remember seeing it a while ago, so I guess it was this last spring or something, but it was good. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it, but what was the story there? And then I want to get into your Sam Adams Award, but the story is Shock and Awe, what they were covering. Knight Ridder was the only ones that were covering this. They're going, we're not being told. And they weren't with the official program in the heat that they came under by reporting what was really going on. What were they reporting?
They were reporting the questions about intelligence that was being leaked intelligence by the White House, by the Pentagon, other places, by the political appointees, the neocons. They were leaking information directly to the Post and specifically to the New York Times and some other places, of course, the subsidiaries of those, leaking information to lend support to the march to war, and leaking information that wasn't validated, leaking stuff that was actually lies, that was known to be lies by people inside the system. But those lies supported the agenda. And the agenda was, we're going to topple Saddam Hussein and we're going to go in there and put his oil exports back on the dollar because he had taken them off. You know, all these things that made them want to go in there. I mean, there's a bunch of reasons why they wanted to do this. So they're leaking stuff to the major papers. And the major papers and Judith Miller at the Times and other places are utilizing this stuff and acting like, hey, I have a, you know, we're really getting some good stuff. And they're questioning that. So Knight Ridder is questioning that. And, they're the only ones doing it for the most part in the American media. I mean, even NPR isn't questioning it. They're taking whatever the government says. Now, overseas media, some of those were questioning, not British, of course. British were entirely part of this process. So, anyway, that was their story. That they're saying something about this stinks. Something about this is rotten.
Okay, now as this went on, and you were one of the ones that were kind of going, and I can see why they would have you there to receive this award because you're kind of saying the same stuff at the same time. You know, that's how we know you. So I'm going. So the award that you got, the Sam Adams Award, tell me about that and who's received it, where it came from.
I haven't done my research yet because I haven't even written my speech yet. I have to do that. But, the award ceremony is coming up this Saturday.
Oh, so it hasn't been done. I thought they already presented. Oh, okay.
They have not presented it. No, but it's been announced. And of course, you know, we're hoping people in the area will show up to the event at 6:30. And I'm going to have to go get the information about it because it's not in front of me. But the Sam Adams Award, there's a guy at the time that the Pentagon Papers came out, Vietnam, you know, with Ellsberg. There was a guy in, I believe it was in the CIA. His name was Sam Adams. He was distantly related to Sam Adams of constitutional fame, you know, a former president years and years ago, decades, centuries ago. And but this Sam Adams was a, I believe, a CIA analyst. He'd been in the military before that. And he was a truth teller. And he explained and pushed when they pushed back in his bureaucracy, he pushed forward with information that was true. And it ended up making a difference. It didn't make an entire, you know, like everything, you know, it makes a little bit of a difference. It doesn't seem to end wars. You know, it doesn't seem to put the right politicians in jail. You know, it doesn't go far enough, but it was successful. And his character and the things that he did in, you know, pushing for honesty in the government bureaucracy, is the foundation of the namesake of the award. And as far as people who have gotten it, I feel really humbled, because the people who've received this award, and I'll get you the list here after the break, but it's amazing. I mean, you know, they're the top, not just whistleblowers, but the top truth tellers that we have, that we are aware of in our generation. Which is why I'm not sure I really belong in that list, but you know, I feel greatly honored to.
I give a vote. You know, I mean, you've been, and it was so simple for you to be able to share with people what was really going on, but you were at the seat of all of this. You were in, you know, next to the Office of Special Plans and the Pentagon with, mm-hmm. you got Rumsfeld and Cheney walking around, mm-hmm. and kind of, if they'd known, it's only through their misogyny that they didn't suspect that you wrote it, because you're a woman.
Well, sure, and also, they...
while it was going on.
The arrogance. Well, yeah, and you gotta, I think, when you work with, you know, in the military, certainly, and when you start out, when you're first in these large organizations, particularly military and government, there's always a sense of awe that you have when you're a young lieutenant or young airman. You know, you have a sense of awe of your leadership. You think, oh, these people are great. These people are powerful. These people are really something. And that's why they're up there. And then as time goes on, you start to observe reality and you realize that that's not the case. You realize that they're not.
What does he want?
I don't know what he wants. He probably, it's one of a zillion things.
He wants attention. There, yes, put him on. Attention. Let's say hello. What's his name?
Oh, no. I'm not putting him on. You'll never get him off. He's worse than me.
Oh. Yes,
go bug Grandpa. Go bug Grandpa.
Yeah, he just sent me in here to bug you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's
But anyway, your sense of awe is tempered by reality over the years. And so by the time that I ended up at the Pentagon, you know, I was kind of familiar with the kinds of people and the skill sets that rise to the top. I guess that's a real nice way to put it. But I was aware of the limitations of our leadership in terms of experience and that kind of thing. So when I would work with people who are in charge, including generals who I tended to default to the position that they earned this. Okay. But I was a little, you know, I kind of had some sense of that each leader would really have to prove their competence. It wasn't going to be assumed that they were competent, because I had seen too many that were not competent. And this is typical. I mean, what I'm telling you is anybody in a major, large bureaucracy comes to this point where they realize that many of their leaders and supervisors in the highest levels are not competent. They're competent at some things. They're competent at getting to the top, but they're not fundamentally competent. They are not necessarily more moral. They are not necessarily more honest. They are not necessarily.
Well, having that observation and shared that with us, what do you look at the crop now in the Trump administration? You know, in comparison with that, is he cleaning it up? Did he make kind of this political appointment, and now a couple of years he's cleaning it up? I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, it's interesting because, what he's done is.
1 hour. You're gonna have to go.
They call it terrible twos for a reason. You know?
Yeah, that's right. They sure do. Well, if you have a break coming up, I'll answer that because I think it's real important to
That's what I'm building up to. Today I wanted to get to where we are now and all the headlines that's going on. I know, you know, whatever attention you give it, you go, yep, here we go, and this person and that person thinks this about that, and this is what I think. We want to find out from Karen Kotowski, evaluation of what's going on. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find.
Yes, I'm loving. You know, let's look at it and see what Karen can help us with, because there's been quite a bit. It's been 2 years. You know, Trump's been in there 2 years. He's gone through a lot of people. Initially, you kind of give him a pass on a bunch of the new guys that come in, just, you know, appointments of whatever the hell. But as time goes on, you're in your second, you got your Senate. You know, the House, they're going to be doing whatever the hell they're going to be doing. And I don't really care, you know, but what's foreign policy looking like? You know, Karen, the people he has in there, the bodies, the names, how you feeling about this? What's going on?
Yeah, well, I mean, as we talked before, I mean, he's got neocons. He's got a whole team of neocons with the mustache guy, John Bolton, up there as his national security advisor. And John Bolton was hired, I think, late last spring. So he's coming on to a year. Pretty soon. He should be fired soon. This is the track record for Trump and his appointments at that level. He keeps them for less than a year and he goes on to the next one. And that, I don't know if that's a tactic or a reaction, but it is a good thing to do. And we're really hoping that this is what he does with Bolton. It's not clear, though, because Bolton has brought up onto the staff both paid and unpaid appointees who are straight out of the same offices that we suffered in 2003 at the Pentagon and in the National Security Council and in the White House under Cheney. So what we're seeing is a lot of the same people. Now, will the results be the same? And I think the big difference is that there is no Cheney and there's no George W. Bush who supported these things, and Cheney who was in the right position to be able to control things really around and through President Bush. I mean, honestly, you know, no offense to poor old the Bushes and the loss of Poppy, but these guys are not competent to really do much except whatever the neocons wanted. I mean, these are warmongering people. These are, you know, Poppy, come on.
Yeah, what was your impression of all of the accolades, you know, laid before the casket of, well, are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's, are you kidding me? Exactly. You know, we have this state ceremony. And again, this worship of dead presidents who are, for the most part, completely awful. They are liars. They are people who have started unnecessary wars. They are mass murderers. I mean, Caitlin Johnstone basically calls them serial murderers, serial killers. And they are. So what we are seeing this week and what we saw previously with the last president that died, and also with John McCain, who wasn't a president but received pretty much what a president would get. This is state worship. This is worship of the state, and it's orchestrated by the state in order to kind of tape up the cracks in American patriotism. They like to control that, and they've had some trouble doing it. You know, there's a lot of things happening in this country, wonderful things happening, that are breaking down the state. I mean, you think about American football. Well, they can't sell tickets anymore. Why? Because some football player wants to kneel instead of stand for the anthem, which is certainly his right to do that. And what has happened is that inadvertently caused people not to show up to watch those military flyovers at the football games. What a cost to the state. What a terrible tragedy for state-run, you know, patriotic drum beating. So anyway, that's what these funerals are about. So I don't really pay much attention to them. It is amazing to hear the words that they say, particularly about
about the Bushes, particularly about Poppy Bush, who, I mean, right now I'm in the midst of reading a book, The Unspeakable. I don't know if you've had Mr. Douglas on before, but the book talking about JFK and why he died and why it matters. This is a fantastically, it's basically the best book on the Kennedy.
All right, Donna, you heard it. Unspeakable.
The best book. Yep. Right. It's fantastic. And so, of course, this guy is not, he's going through the information in a very academic and methodical way. About events that are happening, and he's outlining and describing really the same deep state that is at work, that was at work in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. Our era right now, this is the same group, the same tactics. And Poppy Bush features quite prominently in this. So he's been involved in deep state.
You don't get to be head of the CIA and not be part of the club. Now, that ain't happening.
You got it. And so it's one thing for them to say, you know, he served in many government agencies. That's a true statement, and I can see that in his obituary. But it's another thing to say he was a great and caring, honest, wonderful, patriotic American. No, sorry, can't buy that, you know. But again, it's not about Poppy. It's about getting people to love the state, to worship our dictator or our president, whatever you want to call it. I mean, you cannot have a republic of 330.
All right, where's Trump on that?
Work.
Where's Trump? I mean, I know you're kind of a fan of Gil. Where's he at? I've yet to see all this QAnon stuff was going on. We're doing, and that just seems like a psyop to me. I don't know.
I think it's a psyop. And the people that are following Q, I know we have a lot of people here in our own Republican Party here in our county who follow QAnon, and they believe that he is some sort of, I guess, spiritual guru or insider to the max that is actually spreading huge truths. And of course, it's a psyop. And they're those people who have faith in the state, but just wish it was run by Republicans. Those people are the target of this fundamental patriotic, fake patriotic development. That the government needs.
It's what made Tom Clancy popular. You know, his thing, if Jack Ryan was in charge, you know, it'd be all good. It's just got the wrong people in the system.
That's right. And again, this is the nature of empires. Empires have to have strong men or strong women at the top. I mean, Hillary Clinton, why did she want to be president so bad? You know why? Because it's an empire, and she wanted to be the empress. And, you know, it's a hunger for power, and they need it. The system is, you know, we're encouraged as people to celebrate it instead of recognizing it.
Where's Hillary? She run 2020? What's up?
I think she'll pass away, I think. I don't see where.
Well, she was stone-faced, staring straight ahead when Melania and Trump, I just saw a clip. They come in to the funeral for Daddy Bush, and she's just, man, no emotion. She was a statue. I'm not looking, and they got no deference in nothing.
No. She's mad that she's not going to get a funeral like that. I'm sure she's thinking about her legacy, and her legacy is
I don't know. When she has a funeral, it might be a party.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
You know, it may not be like a Reagan thing, but it'll be, you know, we'll have a party.
No, there'll be a party. That's true.
Back to
Trump and the challenges that he's facing. He's surrounded by people that he shouldn't trust, and I think he doesn't trust them completely, because I think Trump only trusts himself and his close family members. I honestly think this is his strength. He looks at everyone else as how useful they can be to him. So the neocons right now have been useful to him. John Bolton is a well-organized person. He is cultured. John Bolton has cultured a tough guy reputation. You know, you remember him back in the day, you know, he's like all, you know, a tough guy. And that is appealing. That kind of persona, I think, appeals to Trump. But Trump uses people. I mean, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but he just looks at people. How do they fit into my team at the moment? If the team changes, if the team goal changes and those people don't fit, he's like a coach. You know, just because you like the quarterback, if you don't need that kind, if his, you know, his arm goes, that's it. You don't worry. You still like him, but you're not going to use him. And I think that's what is Trump's strength. And I think that's what's going to help for the short term save.
All right, well, we got a lot of short term talk about when we come back. We got Russia, China, you know, China Sea. We got Israel talking about a pipeline. We got Cheney, your friends Cheney and Rumsfeld owning, you know, Genie oil in the Golan Heights is theirs, and they're going to ship and stop Syria. And oh my God.
Wow. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Yeah, let's focus on that. A lot of the news and the G20 just happened, and we kind of let's make a list here of things that you can comment on. One, God, what's his name? MBS or whatever, Saudi Arabia guy. What do they go by? Mohammed.
The Crown Prince.
MBS, whatever. So, Sauds, the House of Saud.
We just had, I think, one or two OPEC members just canceled their membership, too.
Oh, yeah. OPEC, United Arab Emirates, I think. UAE or Qatar or one of them. Whatever, they're all the same. Qatar, OPEC, and let's see, Ukraine and Crimea. The bridge. Okay, what about that?
Bridge. What bridge?
That bridge that Putin has between Crimea and Russia, and they had the ships go underneath it, and they hit the tugs and all that stuff. Did you get attention to that?
No, I didn't. That sounds interesting.
Crimea bridge. All right, let me pull that up. I'll just give you the quickie real quick here. Let's see. Crimea bridge. They had there's a bridge that they, you know, Russia's right there, so they built this bridge to Crimea. Mm-hmm. And as they're here, let me put news here. The Ukrainians wanted to provoke them, so what they did is they wouldn't let them know. Part of the deal is, hey, we're coming underneath your bridge and peace out, and we're, you know, sailing on the bridge. Well, they wouldn't tell. They go, ah, screw you. So Russia sends out some more ships, and they bang the tug. Boom, run into them. Okay. You know, full head of speed. You know, and they board them. They take, the Ukrainian sailors out, and, you know, and they just go, oh, no. Yeah, well, we did it just to provoke you, and ouch, quit it, and back and forth, and whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in Ukraine, because, you know, that's John McCain's baby right there.
Well, what's the thing now is, all the senators, who was it that was, one of the senators now, he's all trumped up. McCain's not around to keep him straight as Lindsey Graham, I think, Lindsey's, we're going to America, the players have changed, but has the game and it's not even like the players change that much. You know, you still got the same bureaucracy behind him, but all right, here we go.
Trump's walking on thin ice. I mean, he knows that.
All right, here we go.
I think he knows that.
Love what we do? Please help support our international satellite channels at patreon.lrn.fm. That's patreon.lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, we're back. Karen Katowski, the big question I want to make sure we get in, we get to talk and all the niceties, and everybody knows that she's the woman, and getting awards and speaking the truth. But she knows. She's been inside. And we got a lot of things. We got OPEC, starting to disintegrate. We have the House of Saud is, you know, in some trouble, but it looks like the Trump administration is going to go, well, if we didn't deal with bad guys, we wouldn't be dealing with anybody, you know. And then, you know, British, of course, is like that. We have China flexing their muscles. We get more and more aircraft carriers out of China, and we got hypersonic missiles from Russia. We got Ukraine, you know, in an uproar, which is, you know, the neocons created that to begin with. And, you know, we have, you know, the Crimea bridge thing. You know, so it just seems like there's, and G20 just happened. So with all of this and the players involved, what can we expect this next year? January is, first week of January is prediction week, man. I what do you think you might be predicting there, Karen?
I haven't thought to the predictions, but I think, I don't, it's just a feeling, but this is going to be, and it's not because of the House doing their data gathering on Trump and keeping that, fanning that flame. I think that's burnt out already. Most of what they're going to find out is just going to be a waste of their time. And if they want to get legislation passed, they are not going to be able to conduct active targeting, you know, political targeting of Trump. Now, I know they want to because they want to win in 2020. They don't even have a candidate. The Democrats have no candidate. So, and that's really bad that they don't have a candidate 2 years before this race. So I
why?
Think the House,
why do they have,
why don't
to
they have
one?
A candidate? Because the Democratic Party is about as busted up as the Republican Party is. And they've got nobody really that all of the Democrats that they need to vote, not counting illegals, or people that are just, you tell them how to vote and they vote. I mean, these are not thinking voters, but of their thinking voters, which the Democrats have a large number of smart people, they don't agree. They don't agree on the philosophical.
Well, Bloomberg's going to Iowa already. Is he going to go Republican, Democrat? He keeps flipping. I don't know. What's Bloomberg?
Yeah, I mean, well, think about it this way. Why would you want a New Yorker running against another New Yorker? Where's the advantage there?
Fireworks, entertainment.
Fireworks. Yeah, fireworks. but who's going to vote for a New Yorker? We don't want that. That's not a choice. I mean, if the Democrats were smart, they would get a strong Western conservative Democrat who is very rational and who is a tough guy, I think, who can take what will be thrown at him barbed wise by Trump, the humiliation that Trump will rain down on that person.
Oh, limpy hands, small hands, your feet, you know, you wear women's size shoes. Oh my God.
That's right. It will be fun. It will be fun no matter what. I mean, I don't care who they get. It'll be an enjoyable election. But the Democrats don't have that person. I mean, little Beto O'Rourke would have been fine if he was 10 years older, but he's not. So Beto's not ready. They can't use Beto. And Beto is just only a degree less shallow than the new congresswoman from one of the New York boroughs that they keep making fun of, Ocasio, whatever her name is.
Yeah,
you know, the woman who doesn't understand economics at all, and she has an economics degree.
Man, she's got some good memes, though. I mean, there are some memes that just, man, they're hilarious.
Well, it's terrible because her university is really being discredited. If she had majored in art history, I think we'd have been fine. But the fact that she majored in economics and comes out with such a the idiotic things that she says is really a shame for her college. It's just awful. But anyway, Beto is not going to be able to do anything. He's a powerful guy, and that kind of a candidate, kind of a Kennedy-esque, everybody likes him, active, he rollerblades, he rides on skateboards, you know.
Does he play saxophone?
I don't know, but it's the next best thing. Yeah, he definitely probably knows how to play all of the computer games that were ever created. I mean, the guy really speaks to a good number of the voters who are activated to vote, but he's not suitable yet. He's not ready yet to take on Trump. And for a guy like him who probably will be president someday, he's not ready to be torn up by Trump in 2020.
Yeah, well, I'm still looking at, you know, whether Trump's going to get reelected or not. And he's done a lot of stuff, but we'll see what sticks here. China, you know, Russia, the G20.
Well, China, I mean, he's looking
the
good
dollar.
On China. He tariffs China and he makes all this stuff and he does tariffs and it has negative ramifications, which he then excuses to his base here in America. And then he has a meeting with the Chinese guy. And next thing you know, oh, well, you know, they're, it makes him look like a winner. It really does. He, I don't know if he's, if it's just the framing of it or he's actually winning, but it looks like winning. And I'll tell you, that's a sign of somebody's going to get reelected. We don't know what will happen in the summer. I mean, I'm sure there'll be an October surprise. It'll probably be a July, September, October, November surprise in the election year when Trump runs for reelection, and assuming that he will do that. But yeah, the Democrats are in no position. They should have been in position already with at least two or three solid candidates, and they've got nothing. They've got 20 different people that are useless.
Well, Pelosi, you get rid of Trump and Pence, Pelosi's next in line. She's going to be president.
Yeah, and how old is Pelosi? She can't even say one paragraph before she loses her.
Yeah, there's something else going on there. What is going on? What placehold is she holding for what? What is happening?
This is well, I'll tell you who she's holding it for. She's deep state to the max, and the deep state's very nervous. They can't trust any of the Democrats to move in to Pelosi's position. Otherwise, we would have had. I mean, Pelosi could have taken an honorable retirement. As it is, she'll probably drop dead at the podium. Okay, and then there'll be a mad scramble for the Democrats to have their leadership. They don't even have a good second, third person to come up there and take her place, which they should be planning for. This poor woman is at the end of her rope saying, okay, take, you know, we know about the notorious, who is this, the oldest Supreme Court justice, the one from New York, the old lady, notorious
Ginsburg,
yeah. Well, you know, Ginsburg has had some health scares, and what is happening? Well, people are concerned. People are making plans. They should be doing more than that. More than they're worried about Ginsburg, they should be worried about Pelosi. And they're not. They don't seem to have anything going. So if she has to retire or go into the hospital for any length of time, the Democrats are so disorganized and so divided, they don't even have what they need to lead. So what will happen is this is ideal territory for Trump to do whatever he needs to do.
Do you really think she's going to be speaker? Or is this just all a feint? Pelosi, yeah.
Yeah, sure, she's going to be speaker. They've already talked to the people and told them we don't want division. And so these new freshman congressmen that were elected and they said we're not voting for Pelosi, that was one that they ran on, that's all water under the bridge. They're voting for her. She will be the speaker. They don't have somebody else. They'll have to wait till she goes.
Well, this Mueller thing, it's got a, oh my goodness, I forgot all about this. Oh man,
exactly.
Maybe I can pull it. Okay, let me tell you what's going on. Last night, Donna, you know, you almost can't stand to watch Saturday Night Live anymore. You know, I just, it's so bad. But sometimes, you know, you have some artist on, or I did, you know, kind of whatever, and the girl that played Queen Elizabeth in The Crown was on, and she liked that. Oh, cool. But anyway, I come in, Saturday Night Live's on. And they had at the end of it, ashamed to say, I watched it all the way through. But the you go at the end, they're doing all I want for Christmas is something, you know, something. There was some, you know, catchy tune that all the cast members keep coming, all the women, and they start. And what it was is at the end is all I want is you, and it was Mueller. It was Mueller. With a Santa hat, and what they were saying, they go, look. Tell us, the basic message was at the end of the show is for 5 minutes they're singing this song, tell us we're not crazy. You know, you finished a god darn report. You know, show us what's up. Come up with something. You know, it's been 2 years. Even Saturday Night Live is calling BS on this Russiagate thing and wanting to get a result. Do you think he's going to reveal anything?
Well, I mean, he's going to have to, but... It is okay with Mueller, just like with what we saw from the very beginning, even before the election, when they were spying illegally with you know, strange warrants that are legal, and they were using that data to get Trump or to follow Trump's staff members as he was running. All of this is political. So Mueller really has every interest in continuing to percolate as long as possible until we get into full-blown election season. That's what they're probably trying to do. So that Merry Christmas is not going to happen in January. And his whole two-year, what are you doing? Well, he's doing what all governments do. He's wasting money. But it's going to percolate. It has to percolate. The only usefulness of his investigation, given that it's a whole bunch of low-level stuff, it's a whole bunch of smoke, you know, like smoke and little, and any one of those little things might catch fire. As time goes on, it looks like they won't, but we don't know that. His incentive and his job, Mueller's job, is to postpone this until the Democrats have settled on who they think can be a candidate, and then use that for the other party to get rid of Trump. I mean, because both Republicans and Democrats, the whole deep state, wants to get rid of Trump. They don't want Pence. They want to get rid of him without making Pence president, right? And like you said, number three is Pelosi. Do they want Pelosi to be president?
Wow, no.
So
I do. That'd be awesome.
One time?
Oh, you bring on Pelosi. That'd be entertainment galore.
It would be, but that's not what they, that's not what the deep state and the settled bureaucracy and the investment, the money that benefits from and pays for our U.S. federal government, that's not what they want. They don't want Pelosi, they don't want Pence, and they don't want Trump. Well, if you get rid of Trump, you got Pence. They don't want that, okay? He's not really that controllable, and he's, you know, it's a lot of work to really work Pence. He's best in the box that they have him in right now. So basically, they're going to put their energy into election, which means Mueller has to, he has to wait. He has to keep leaking what he can leak and keep this thing in the news low levels, you know, see if he can get some of these new congressmen to have.
Well, is Whitaker, the AG's office, going to start doing a Clinton Foundation investigation?
And again, all aimed at 2020 election. Absolutely. It's all coming. So this is all really, if you think about it, this is election theater. This is 2020 election theater.
Well, Epstein's thing is coming out too. You know, I mean, they're resurrecting the Lolita Express narrative. All right, this is how they did it. There was a guy that was up for possibility for attorney general, and they made a big deal out of, no, we can't do him because he worked with the deep state and went real light on Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he kind of, you know, he was working with, this child pedophile, whatever, got a light send. He's part of them, mm-hmm. so we can't pick him. So they used that as an opportunity to highlight that and resurrect that story.
Yeah. I'm telling you, everything is going to be about 2020. And it's going to be not the most important election. They're not; none of them are important in a.
It's the most important election of our lifetime.
It's going to be a very entertaining and dirty one. It's going to be very dirty and very entertaining, and there'll be lots of interesting things to watch and talk about. But no, all of this stuff is not really about our country surviving. Now, if you want to talk about the larger things about our country surviving, we're talking about war, we're talking about trade, we're talking about debt, that kind of thing. We're talking about liberty in this country and freedom of speech. Those are the battlefields where our country lives or dies as a nation. What Trump is doing on those areas is really pretty okay. He hasn't made new wars. He certainly threatened a lot of stuff, but in fact, he talks a lot. And I'll tell you, the same day that Pompeo said, we're pulling out of the INF, Intermediate Nuclear Range Missile Treaty. This is a 31-year-old treaty. Both parties are violating the treaty in technical terms already and have been for probably well over a decade. But we're getting out of it. We're saying, well, the Russians have cheated. And until they come to the table with some clarification, you know, we're out of it. And that's great. The very same day that this happened, Trump tweeted, that was December 4th, Trump tweeted about, in context of his Chinese, he said, you know, we're all spending way too much money on offensive weapons and military spending. It's just so expensive. This arms race is so expensive. Okay, that's Trump talking. That's Trump talking as a businessman. And that kind of thing, I think people that care about peace need to be happy that he would tweet something like that, because that is not only a true statement, it reflects kind of his thinking.
So we need a space force.
Yeah, but really, you think we're going to really get a space force? I mean,
I have no idea.
I honestly think he did that to shake up the generals and to find out where his enemies are. The military did not want a space force. You know that, right? The Pentagon was opposed.
Rods from God tight, you know, tungsten rods dropping down, kind of, that's too cheap, man. You can't do that. That's cheap. We got to have some, like, big program. And when they did the F-35, you know, in Europe, they had all these F-35s and CRF-35s work, and they taken off. Yeah. And I'm going, who the hell, that's some general bullshit there.
It is, absolutely, absolutely. And see, Trump is not, he didn't come thank God, he came from real estate and banking, I guess you could say, borrowing money. He's good at that. He didn't come from the defense establishment. So his connections are not with those people. And he views those people as people who run businesses that make money, but they don't necessarily do it efficiently. And he recognizes them for exactly what they are, parasites. And I don't think he's, I think real estate in New York is a parasitic kind of thing. He has to have connections with politicians. Yeah. He said that for decades.
Well, he did with Moscow. You know, that's what this whole thing they're going. He really was working on, having a Trump Tower or whatever in Moscow. Yeah, I'm like, so what?
We should give him a medal for that.
Well, hell, that was why he's running for president. They're trying to make a big deal out of it. And he goes, yeah, so? And I'm going, you think that's bad? Shit, he was picking out condo locations in North freaking Korea beaches. You know, he's like, hey, man, they got beautiful beaches right here, man. We're going to do it. You know, so
I'm telling you, he thinks like an average person. He's not an average person, but his view of things is very simple and fresh, like a lot of people would view it. You know, if you went to North Korea, let's say you went to North Korea, like Trump had the opportunity to do, and you saw these great beaches, wouldn't you say that? How many people have been to a place and they go, wow, wouldn't it be cool? You know?
Yeah. Remove those anti-aircraft and artillery pieces, right, and put a condo there, and
sure,
you're good.
And actually, you know, we had this happen. You remember in Puerto Rico, Vieques or whatever, they had a big old Navy training base, and they bombed up the beaches and everything. Well, they got Puerto Ricans got rid of the Navy. They caused them to close that test place.
They had a bunch of pollution and all kinds of crap. They were dumping
Cleaned it up, and the natural beaches were just fantastic. And it's condos and beaches and hotels and stuff there. And now Puerto Rico is no well-managed little territory. There's no doubt about that. They're not well-managed. There's tons of corruption. But people can see, hey, you've got an opportunity to make money instead of destroy things. That's common sense. So I think Trump still has a great connection. You know, and the other thing that they're so worried, like Trump's going to, like, oh, we can beat Trump. I'm like, man, this guy's more popular after 2 years than Obama, than Bush, the other Bush. You can go back all the way as far as you want. He's running at 50% popularity after midterm elections. That's insane. That's amazing. Okay, so I think the Democrats fundamentally recognize this.
Okay, we're going into the next hour here directly. Can you do another segment? I wanted to talk about this live on the air.
Yeah, I can do one more segment. Yeah.
Yeah. We got to make up for grandkid time.
That's right.
You know, that's the way it is. Hold on a second. Yeah.
Are you good with me leaving the top of this hour?
Yeah, I got the recording still going.
You want me to stop it?
No.
A new hour?
Well, yeah, okay.
Let's we'll break it down.
All right, go ahead. Use this. I just stop it here.
Stop and then hit start.
Start.
Okay.
All right, so we're going into the new hour. All right, 20 seconds. We'll come back and we'll kind of, because this is probably best part of the show, freaking last 8 minutes. So what we'll go ahead and do is the Moscow story, Cohen's thing, North Korea, and them dragging this out to 2020. God, do I gotta? Here we go.
News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, welcome back to the Clarion. Declare Your Independence. Yeah, we're still talking with Karen. We can get another segment or two out of her, you know, while we can. We had a really good conversation in the off show. You go to the archive or you're watching live streaming. It looks like we got it all working good and right buttons, and we still got some stuff to deal with. But you go to freedomsphoenix.com, top left, you'll see the live stream there, and you get the commercial breaks live. Now, we include that in the archive, but, you know, to be able to do it live while we're yakking it, you know, that's always better. We're talking to Karen Kotowski from she's a lieutenant colonel, retired from the Pentagon, that was inside when 9/11 hit. She was there too. That's a whole nother thing. We've done shows on that with her about. But what we're talking about, this big news right now is that his attorney, Cohen or what, who cares? You know, you lied to Martha Stewart if you didn't tell the right and kind of go get some. So he's going to have to, you don't lie. You're better off just say, kiss my butt. I ain't saying nothing. I don't recall. You got to get that down, you know?
Yes.
So it's people of conscience that even worry about this stuff. I mean, sociopaths, they're just like, yeah, put me on the lie detector. I don't care. You know, so this is the lie was Trump was working on building Trump hotels or towers or whatever around the world. He's always in somewhere we're going to do some business. Well, one of them was Moscow, and he had that deal was still going, I guess, while he's running for president, and they're making a big deal out of that, and he goes, yeah, so? I mean, you know, what's your point? And I'm going, yeah, I remember as president when he's working with Kim Jong grandson, you know, in North Korea, and Kim Jong-un, he's like, you know, look, you're doing all this artillery stuff on the beach, boom, 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 boom. You got, you know, your mines here, you got, you know, anti-aircraft there. So you go, man, you're not seeing it. You're not seeing it, man. Look at these beaches. You need a condo there. You need a, you know, a little resort over here. Got a golf course here. Man, you got some beautiful beaches. He's doing real estate development freaking in North Korea as president. I'm like, wow. You know, so this whole Moscow thing, you know, what have you been hearing about that? And Cohen, give me your spiel on that.
Well, I have to say, I'm on terms of Cohen, I haven't paid much attention to him. I don't. You know, you're right. Do not recall, or I'm exercising my Fifth Amendment right. That's the only thing anybody ever needs to say to a law enforcement officer of any type. I'm sorry. You just don't talk to them. The government is a long established tradition, and it is legal for FBI agents to lie, cheat, steal, corrupt, to do anything that's none of us can do, but they're doing it. You know, legally. I mean, it's not right, but they're doing it legally, and they are allowed to do that to get whatever story that they can get. And they're not looking for necessarily you tell the story. They're going to get pieces and bits and pieces, and they're going to put together a story. And then they're going to say, well, this is your story. And then if you deny that's your story, or you say something, I said something else, now you're a perjurer, and you're going to go jail for that, just like you said, Martha Stewart and any other number of people have done. So you don't talk to police. You don't talk to the feds. You say, I don't recall, or I'm exercising my Fifth Amendment. That's it. That's all you say. So Cohen is a lawyer, and he's probably a scumbag. You know, that doesn't make him unusual. But he should have known better to start talking. Why would he do that? I don't know. I haven't followed it closely enough. Has he done wrong things? Probably. You know, 100% of people in this country could be thrown in jail if you talk to police. It's just that simple.
Yeah, nothing seems to, you know, be sticking to Trump, though, and anything that they come up with.
No.
Well, I mean, the guys that are doing it, what about this Don or Dan Bongino guy? Have you been paying attention to his book, Spygate?
Just a little bit. Haven't read his book, though. Just seen a little bit of the reporting on it. Yeah, I'm telling you, there's this stuff's not gonna hurt Trump. He is a unique person, and he has a lot of confidence, but in reality, I think Trump himself is judging this whole investigation, multiple investigations, you know, all these people that the FBI is getting to say things. I think he's judging it correctly. He's putting it in the right box. And that is a box of annoying, stupid things that the opposition is working on. That's all they have. More power to him.
You know, he's got Twitter. His thing was, it's like owning a newspaper without the overhead.
That's right.
That's why I remember the lamestream media, the media so last century when he was president-elect, they go, you're not going to be tweeting and do unpresidential stuff like that and bypassing us, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah, I am.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, but throughout history, and certainly our 20th century history, presidents get lied to by their staff. You know, that's part of what we were talking about earlier in the show about what I saw and what people inside saw. But the very bureaucracy that's supposed to serve the president is filled with history of lying to that very same president. And there's all the different ways you can lie, right? You can withhold information. You can tell part truths. You can bald-faced lie. They do all of that to the president. So this idea that Americans may have that, oh, he has a staff, he has his people, he has a strong government that will serve him. My goodness, they don't serve the president. They have rarely served the president. And when they do serve him, they serve him on things that they happen to agree with that the president is doing. Okay? If they don't agree with what the president
is doing. Oh, hell, CNN comes out and says what a great president he is after he cruise missile strikes Syria. I mean, you do something like that, then all of a sudden you're great. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know what I'm waiting for, Karen? This is what I'm waiting for. Trump, the movie. It's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
But no, I mean... No, Trump, I think, knows what he's dealing with. He comes from the outside. He judges the people around him based on their performance and loyalty to him. When that drops off, when that fails, they're gone. We hope and pray that he will get rid of the neocon cadre that he brought in last summer. But I have to consider, though, that even with Bolton there and the neocons that are on Bolton's team. And of course, one of them got fired by the first lady not long ago. Remember that?
Yeah. Okay.
That's interesting. Sure.
Now she was, do whatever Bolton says person, staff or something. Mm-hmm. Right.
That's
and
right.
She, you know, when, Melania, all I know is Melania was on her Africa trip.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some resource asset come. She's like, I need. She goes, no, you're only first lady, and kiss my butt, and you're not. And I'm the. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they done pissed off the wrong woman. I happen to
That's
be
right.
Melania. I'm not an idiot to begin with. Oh, and by the way, I'm a wife of the president. And let me show you how this works.
Yeah.
So
but
I
also, yeah.
Well, you know, of course, Hillary did that with the. You know, the travel didn't have any good reason to, what, you know, there was inside BS.
Yes, she did.
Hillary
had a reason to get rid of her travel people. She wanted to put her own people in.
That's a good reason.
She needed her people in who would cover up her crimes. That's why she got rid of them.
Well, Melania, do we know more about what happened? Or do we care?
I don't have a good picture of it, but I'll tell you this. Melania is extremely valuable to the nation and certainly to Trump. And part of it is, first off, she's real smart. Okay, and not to say other first ladies haven't been real smart, but Melania is understands how the world works in ways that I think no previous first lady has ever had the slightest clue.
Very true.
Okay, and the other thing about Melania is she comes from countries who have suffered terrible crimes by their governments. So she doesn't go into this thinking, oh, the government's good for cares about American people.
Another good
she
point.
Understands instinctively that governments don't care.
Hell, she
people.
May know that the government of the United States of America doesn't care. Where the hell she's been around the world.
That's exactly right. That's right. So she's valuable and a great.
You know, that's one thing. The names, babies' names, 100-something% increase. In
from the sixth letter.
Oh, got to do this one. Hold on a second.
A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the Crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation, a difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the Crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The Crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the Crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the Crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
Melania, one thing I wanted to get in is that the I saw somewhere the names of children. Of course, Melania is more popular now. It's gone up, I don't know, 100-some% or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But Ivanka, you know, Ivanka. Ivana is the wife, right? The ex-wife. And Ivanka has gone up like 300-400%. You know, they're woo, we like that Ivanka name. You know? So she's kind of, except if you go on the paparazzi of what she's wearing as she leaves her house every day, you know, Ivanka's kind of went low profile. What up with that?
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. Well, I think, I don't really know. And also it's interesting about Kellyanne's husband, who's constantly criticizing Trump. What is that?
Yeah.
About?
What the hell?
I mean, that's strange because maybe he wants his wife to come back to New York and take care of the kids.
That's
I don't know
Madeline. What the hell is his name? Mary Madeline and,
that's true. It could be one of those.
What the hell was the guy, the Democrat's name?
The guy from Louisiana.
Yeah, I know. What's the Raging Cajun, what's his name?
Carville. Yeah, James Carville.
Yeah, Carville and Madeline, you got the Republican and Democrat, kind I guess the sex is better or something. I mean,
I don't know. It's funny how, and it could be that that's just, a good thing to have him there because it kind of Trump is not bothered by it. And it could prove, politically useful. Who knows? I mean, it's interesting. It's funny that Trump's cabinet and his staff is pretty heavy populated by professional women. It's funny because, we got this Me Too thing and they think Trump's like all this terrible thing. And it's like, man, he's actually, he's raised incomes are going up. He's got lots of prominent women that he listens to. You certainly don't see, Clinton doing that. Clinton had women around, but there he wasn't listening to them. I mean, they weren't advising him. I mean, even W. Bush had women that he actually relied on in his cabinet. But Trump exceeds all of the previous presidents, I think, in terms of that. So, he's doing things right. I mean, he's doing things right. He certainly hasn't alienated his base. The Republicans will, the Republican Party is a kind of a strange, weak sister, really. I mean, the Republicans are divided. It's a declining party in terms of voters. The Republican Party cannot get younger voters for the life of them. And Trump is the only guy that can reach out to potential Republicans and get them to vote Republican. And the Republican Party itself knows this. So they're latching on, like you said, with the senator there in the absence of McCain.
Sinema.
Yeah, that they're all, they're latching on to Trump because Trump has the electoral magic.
Think of this. I don't know if you were heard about it or I told you you've been on during this, but Kyrsten Sinema, I interviewed her back in 2003. And it was CNN called. They had to have that interview. Some was in an article I wrote about something. I said, if I do this, I'm going to give it to everybody because I know what's going to happen. Well, that's where McSally did this. You're a traitor, Taliban traitor. That was from our interview. Mm. And what happened, it got such a bit, but McSally was so shrill, just so ew, that all Sinema had to do, there was some focus group of all I got to do is bake cookies and wear a cute dress and smile and go, golly shuck and gee willikers, and then whatever the hell they do at the county elections of kind of, and she's senator. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, you know, she's going to be the machine. It's represented here in Arizona, just like Napolitano was governor here, went on the Department of Homeland. It's always Arizona. Arpaio, mm-hmm. McCain, Kyle, these
yeah,
guys.
Isn't that weird?
I mean,
yeah.
It's amazing, Arizona. There's a reason. Mm-hmm. We can go long into it why, but it doesn't matter. The point is that Arizona's got its issues. Well, during all of this, I'm going, why would CNN want to bring this up and that she's really, you know, a peace activist and she's just, yeah, you know, what can we do to take out, do for Israel whatever they want and will this and I'll spend some money and I can work with anybody and blah, 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 blah. I'm kind of, you look in retrospect, the CNN coverage of her really being an anti-war activist may have gotten her more votes.
This could be. Well, certainly, just because the New York Times and the Post celebrate launching cruise missiles and blowing up stuff overseas in places that nobody knows, the actual people in this country, like people everywhere, they do not want that. To me, more and more people are recognizing, and Trump articulates this, that every bomb you drop is a waste of money. That's money that you could have fixed a bridge with. That's money you could have fixed a school with, and people actually think that way. It's not that Trump's coming up with this. People think this way because it's logical. Why would the government take my money and blow it up? We laugh at people who, there was something on the internet where a goat in some European country ate up all the guy's money that he had stored, his paper money, the goat ate it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's like our government. It's like a goat that eats dollar bills. What? That's stupid. Kill the goat.
Goat.
Course, that's what they did. Well, they did kill the goat. That was the story. They ate the goat. The goat ate their 200,000 euros. And so they ate the goat. But I mean, that's logical. That's how people think. We see huge waste in our government. And one of the biggest obvious forms of waste, it's not necessarily always the biggest form, but the obvious form is when you bomb countries that nobody cares about for no reason, except possibly to promote companies like Genie Oil, per se, you promote a friend of government, you promote a business, or you put more money into one of the defense contractors' hands. Yeah, sure, there's a few jobs associated with that, but for the most part, Americans recognize that this is a waste of money, and it needs to be not done in hard times. And of course, hard times are coming. We're in a cycle that is going to bring us into, and this is the real determiner of whether Trump prevails or doesn't, in terms
well,
of
this trade war stuff is going to, have an impact on something. And I know, libertarians are all about free trade and this and kind of open mm-hmm. and whatever, and I'm yeah. hip to that. But, what got me in started, and this is what, got me going, it was the Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act of 88, my father's company shipping doing it. We've talked about that before. The mm-hmm. thing was, is that the United States trade representatives would negotiate some deal and then go work for the country they negotiated it with.
Yeah.
And
there's a huge corruption. Yeah. Governments need to stay out of trade. Trade should be free. Well, and the governments need to stay out of it.
What do you think is going to happen with China? Him doing all of this stuff. He's hard on. You know what? I executive president. I can do trade of national, whatever the hell of duty of, you better pay attention mm-hmm. to me because I got the pen right here, son bitch.
If I was Trump, and I'm sure he thinks long term, he's doing this and that. He's using hostile words and he's getting people to shape up. Then he's talking to them and loosening trade a little bit. I would just wait until about, 9 months before November in the year 2020. And I would then, drop the tariffs and let goods flow. That will make people happy. It will, the consumer, it'll make the consumer happy. Because see, when you do tariffs, ultimately the consumer pays for that. And to some extent, workers pay for that. But workers are not the largest group in this country. Consumers are. We are a consuming nation, not a producing nation. So right now he's hurting workers. The consumers haven't felt it yet, but they will. But the first person who will feel it when he relaxes these is going to be the voters. It's going to be the consumers. It's a ploy, I mean, seriously. And he's right. He's right to say when trade things aren't fair, because they're never fair. I wish they would listen to Ron Paul. You don't need 1,000 pages of a trade deal. You need one word, one sentence
that says there will be free trade, unrestricted. You don't need these negotiations because it's always about where the guy's going to work afterwards and whose back is he scratching and who's scratching.
Yeah,
his back.
No, these are
awful things.
Yeah, we've gone through it. It's all negotiated and who benefits and who was at the table and paid off the guy of the special interest of the union.
That's right. It's corrupt. It's a corrupt business. It's a terrible thing. Libertarians are right to oppose it. For Trump to use tariffs as a mechanism for achieving his goals, and I think possibly one of those goals will be to get reelected. I don't know that, but if that is his goal and he uses trade and tariffs, relaxing them and making them and creating them, whatever he wants to do, hey, fine. That's the world that he inherited. That is the way our government has been ruining trade for decades, for centuries, really. But
China finally has somebody or something they can respect. They're like, God, man, how long we've been getting away with this, you know?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and also with Trump using his public outreach through tweets and statements that are not cleared by the bureaucracy, this gives him huge power when it comes to negotiating, because anybody negotiating with Trump realizes you better not listen to what the State Department bureaucrat tells you. You better go straight to the source, because Trump could contradict them at any moment, and he's the president. So you really need to focus. So Trump is having a wonderful a realignment of power and how things work.
Yeah. Tell me about Haley. You know, what the hell happened there? Who? What's
well,
her
thank
deal?
God she's gone.
Well, I mean, you know, okay. Well, let's tell the audience what's up. You know, Nikki
know
Haley is she's in the wings on the shelf of when they need her. You know,
probably.
You know, Nikki Haley was selected as the United Nations ambassador or representative, whatever.
It's John Bolton's former job. Yeah.
And well, she had a relationship with him, didn't she?
With Bolton?
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. I'll have to look into that. That's very interesting. Well, She's certainly a neocon. She certainly takes her talking points from Bolton. And I'm sure Bolton was still giving her talking points when he was up there before she got let go from that position. I'm sure that
why? Why was she like, what happened?
I don't know. I tell you, I suspect.
Trump the movie.
Yeah, Trump the movie. And I think Trump told her to do something or thought that he did. Maybe he told Bolton to tell her. I don't know. And Bolton told her something different. She did what Bolton said, not what he expected her to do, and she's gone. I mean, it doesn't take much to get fired in Trump world. This is what's so beautiful about it, and why I'm keeping my fingers crossed that Bolton will not be long for this for his position. But again, that might be wishful thinking, but traditionally he does not keep people when they're no longer useful to him.
I don't know. It's useful to keep Rosenstein around. What's up there?
Again, there's so much drama. Trump the movie is going to have to tell you that. But I think with Nikki Haley, I mean, if you know how assertive she was in the things that she said and how you use the word shrill. I mean, she was pretty shrill, pretty neocon, pretty out there. I don't think that served Trump's longer term vision, because truly Trump's vision in foreign policy is, while it hasn't played out like a lot of people would have liked based on what he said in the campaign, he didn't want more wars. He wanted to bring troops home, and he wanted to trade with everybody. That's what he said. Now, 2 years into his presidency, yeah, he's dropped a few bombs. He hasn't really brought all the troops home. He's tried to make friends, but he really has been more hostile than he should have been to Russia because of all these Democratic and Republican attacks on his loyalty, you know, his patriotism, which is really a crude and stupid way to go about dealing with the president, but that's what they're doing. And so it's actually pushed Russia away a little bit, caused Trump to have to take certain positions. But in fact, he's talking to all these people. This Korea thing, if he did nothing else, if Trump sat in his office and never let another tweet out, the achievements that he had in the Korean Peninsula are historic. And of course, any other president, you'd have some celebration in the media about that, but you don't get this.
Taking out the minefields, taking out the checkpoints, taking out the guard towers. They just had this last week a train.
He's ending the armistice. That's right. There's going to be peace on the Korean Peninsula.
They just had a train that went from South Korea to North Korea just this last week or something.
Yep. And where do we hear that about? We don't hear that because that's a Trump success. And seriously, for people that – there's a lot of people that say, well – you know, you Republicans or you other independents, you know, you voted for Trump. And look, he hasn't done anything. Well, let me tell you, if he has ended Truman's disaster in Korea, that no president could fix, could resolve, and every president made worse, and he's actually resolved that, that alone is worth 4 years of hell. I don't even care what he does. You know, I don't care what policies he does. That alone for the planet is just a gift, really. And of course, he doesn't get credit for it, but he needs to. He needs to get a little credit for the things that he does. And I think his attitude is very similar to the people that voted for him, which is some Republicans, a whole lot of non-aligned independents. They don't want war. They don't want the waste of money to build bombs that are not defensive and not useful to them. They want America to be put first in their hearts. They think of our country. They're patriotic in a very traditional, like, I love my country, you know. There's nothing wrong with that. He shares that with them. He doesn't, may not share a lot with a lot of the people that voted for him. He is a New York business person born with a pretty much a silver spoon in his mouth, much as we used to say. How many people said that at Poppy's funeral, born with a silver spoon in his mouth? Because he certainly was. I bet it never came up, right? But Trump is kind of like that. So he doesn't have everything in common with his voters, but he does share kind of a common sense approach. He doesn't like waste, you know. He's flamboyant. There's no doubt about that. I mean, if you see the way he decorates, my God, he's flamboyant. But he doesn't like money to be thrown down a toilet. And guess what? Most Americans, and certainly the ones that voted for him, they agree with him on that. Yeah, we don't like money to be thrown down a toilet. Okay, there's your campaign. Yeah, the other guy wants to just waste your money. I don't. Hey, I'm voting for Trump if that's what he says. If these are the choices that we have.
What's his popularity? You were mentioning that in the break before.
He's running 48-50% popularity, or he was last time I checked. Now that the Democrats didn't get their blue wave that they wanted, but they did pick up the seats, which is totally expected. The House generally goes.
Why is that totally expected? Why?
It's just
what psyop is that?
It's not like a psyop. I shouldn't say it's totally expected. Historically, the midterm elections after a president, like say the Republicans.
No, I understand that historically, but just a historical is a psyop. They just make it happen so that they can say it always happened, so they can make it happen again.
That could be true too. Yeah.
You know,
now, I will say there's dissatisfaction. Your closest elections to the people at the federal level certainly is the House of Representatives, right? Those are the people that are in smaller districts. You have a chance to actually meet that guy. You know the guy that's been serving you. You've probably met him. You know, you follow what he does. There's huge dissatisfaction. You want to turn these people out as much as you can. So, I don't think the Democrat. I don't devalue, I guess, the Democratic achievement here. I think in a lot of cases, they were speaking to the people, their electorate, to some extent. You know, they want change. They want somebody different. It's also interesting, and this is actually what you could do a whole show on the future, but demographics in this country are changing. A great many of the races were so close. I think that's something that we haven't seen as much. So what you're seeing is, we're seeing a bluing and a purpling.
I don't trust the system. I hate putting any faith in numbers of a government computer. Yeah. If they did, I don't care.
The government computer. Yeah, that's right. That's true.
Well, hell, it's not even a government computer anymore. You know, I don't care. It's wallet voting. It's where, you know, you're spending your money, your time, educating your children, the future of the decentralized nature of, I got a farm and horses and live next door to Karen. So I... I don't care. I really, really, I don't get, I'm ashamed of myself. I know as much as I do about all this crap, you know?
Because it's really stupid. And I'll tell you, at any time, it's like all politics, history, global, whatever, human beings, we outnumber the politicians, we outnumber the army, we outnumber the cops, we outnumber all these people that would exercise government force against us and do things to us. And at some point, politicians have to follow the people or they will get hung. They will get hung and they'll get pitchforked and they'll get run over by big trucks and whatnot. And it, because nobody's going to listen to them. So politicians ultimately always depend on the people that live on the land, people that live in the area. And those people will control things. And I think a good example of that is that Ocasio woman, the little kind of democratic socialist airhead that they elected out of the New York borough. People live not right on top of each other there, so it's a very small geographic area. that she has as a as a district, she's going to find out that her voters and her people that live there, even who they may not have voted for, but the people in her district, they have certain expectations about what she's supposed to be doing. And she'll either do that or she will not be reelected. I mean, the people ultimately do have the power. And it's not necessarily based on philosophy, based on ideology. It's based on you're here to do a job, and you either do it or we're going to get somebody who will do it.
I got to push back on this. All of this pontification on, you know, and prediction of kind of the people and the vote and this, that is all under the assumption that it's accurate what people want or even voted. I don't trust it. I don't, Karen. I mean, you've been in close enough to this. It's trillions of dollars of they, them, those money, and they do whatever they need to do of do. And they're still counting votes on stuff.
They're doing a lot of crazy things. And also, you would have thought by now that every state, every voting booth would have paper records, backup paper records to do recounts with, and they don't. I would never. In any state.
Yeah, you want to recount? Let me push that button again. Yep, that's the same thing.
Yeah. That is, I don't trust any of that at all. And I would never, but luckily I don't have to deal with it because we have paper ballots here in Virginia. So at least there's the sense that if they had to recount, they could do it.
Dr. Frank, I kind of semi-almost voted this year. Okay, this is what happened.
Semi-almost.
Well, you know, I go like this. A friend of mine brings in his early ballot. He just signs it. And help me, you know, kind of thing. And I go, hey, you can help me. You know, we'll go down here and you can, I'll be a disabled voter. Okay. So sure enough, he's like, oh yeah. I voted bumper stickers a bunch of times. Okay. So go down and I go, one at a time. I go, well, I'm a disabled voter. I need him to help me. They go, okay. All you gotta do is say disabled. Go in, get it. And kind of here, you can help me. You know, he helped me, and then, I'm good. I semi-voted, kind of.
Wow, isn't that something?
Disabled.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Yeah, I think the states, I think the deep state's in trouble. I think there's too many things they can't control that they want to control, and their attempts at control are backfiring. Trump is an example. The very fact that a guy like Trump got elected and gets away so far, he hadn't been assassinated. That's huge. That's fantastically huge. So I don't think the control.
Do you think assassination would serve their interests?
No, not because he chose wisely in his vice president. That nobody wants him. So
why? What is it? What is so abhorrent about? I mean, not that I know or care, but I mean, what's the difference? But I mean, he chose him because. What? Who put that on the list of you gotta and if only what?
Yeah, it's hard to say precisely why, but you know I think he chose Pence a lot of the way that that Bush Herbert Walker Bush chose Quayle. Wasn't Quayle?
Yeah,
Herbert Walker Bush
and Quayle. And from Arizona.
Because, you know, all this talk about Poppy, you know, and how great he was. I'm telling you, when the man was elected, first off, it was a three-way race, and most conservatives voted for the Reform Party. So Trump, Herbert Walker Bush was not seen as a conservative. He did not have unified Republican support. People didn't really like him. That's why he lost. He chose the weakest sister from a Midwestern state that he could possibly find in Dan Quayle, a guy he could trust who had nothing, who wouldn't outshine him. And that's what Trump needed, and that's what they always usually need anyway. Somebody that
Dan Quayle's originally from here in Arizona. He's an Arizona guy.
Is he really?
Yeah, his family had a bunch to do with owning the Arizona Republic paper, and went back to the dad. Arizona.
Yeah, but Quayle wasn't gonna. He was young. He wasn't well known. He wasn't particularly ambitious, I don't think, in terms of wanting to be president. And you know, I mean, again, I think that's why they chose Pence. Now, Pence could probably imagine himself being president. I don't doubt that. I think he has some ambitions. But, he's able to stay in the background and not be particularly, he's just there as a backup. And he is leans neocon, but he's not brought up through them. So they can't control him. They probably couldn't control him anymore than they can control Trump. I'm just saying he's not, you know, if you want to get rid of Trump, you wouldn't want to do it unless you could also get rid of the other guy, and then you're left with Pelosi. So, you know, it's not suitable. This is a strategy. I mean, this thing is like, you know, if you read about you know, the old popes back in the day when they were all corrupt families that yeah. connived with each other. Or you look at the kings, the histories of kings and emperors, you know, all of the drama and all of the manipulation that goes around to keeping, maintaining and keeping power. That's what Trump's
good at. No, U.S. wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong.
It's the exact same thing, and Trump's good at it so far anyway. He's stayed on
well,
top.
The fact that he's been able to just even exist and stay there
exactly.
and continue.
Exactly.
They did not they didn't anticipate this. Whoever nope. the hell's on the other side did not see this going this long. How could they possibly?
I think the entire Republican leadership thought that he would never tweet again. And that was a wrong thought, because that's one of his huge mechanisms of leveraging power.
Okay, why would you think they thought he wouldn't? Why?
Well, I mean, they thought that they would be able to consult with him once he was elected, if he was elected. And, of course, they didn't think he would win over Hillary. They hoped Hillary would win. Many Republicans voted for Hillary. Poppy voted for Hillary. George W. Bush voted for Hillary.
Yeah.
I mean, these people wanted Hillary. And they thought she was going to win. They wanted to be on the winning side, the neocon side. They had it. So when he won, first off, they were shocked, didn't really have a plan. And then they thought, well, he'll get the briefings. He'll get the briefings and he'll understand how this job works and that he can't do this. And they underestimated Trump. But he's not one of them. And if they'd known him better, they wouldn't have underestimated him. But they didn't know. They didn't care to know. And honestly, the political elite, just like Hillary's contempt and hatred for Trump is typical of how the whole entire political elite in this country feels towards him.
Why though? I mean, they're all buddies and buddies, and she thought he was in with the crowd of buddies, and he was playing her the whole time.
The definition of elitism in this country: they are morally superior, they are educationally superior, they are intellectually superior, they are financially superior. They are superior to the scums that are the voting populace. They are selected by, they have the Godhead. This is how they view themselves. I'm not saying it's true, but that's how they view themselves.
Yeah, you wonder if Trump, you know, he knows that and he plays, you know,
oh,
on
he plays it. Because you can anger them so yeah. easily, and he knows it. He says, I'm sure he's having great fun, and I hope he continues to have great fun.
Well, a lot of people that subscribe to his Twitter feed, did you see? Oh, I get it sent to me. This is great. They're entertaining them. I mean, yes. Damn. You know,
yeah,
I tell you, this QAnon thing, you know, you give it some deference because it had, you know, such a big impact on a lot of people. But from the beginning, I'm going, this just seems like a psyop.
Now, well, you know,
I'm not feeling good about this.
This is what gets me about QAnon or anything like that. Here's a guy, he says, well, I'm anonymous. I have to stay anonymous for my own safety. And then the stuff that he's saying is like, that's not going to get you in trouble. There's 100 people saying this. Why is this going to get you in trouble? Why are you so worried about? So that's what makes you think it's a psyop. Because a normal person saying, or entity saying, the things that QAnon is saying, hey, put your name on it. No reason not to. You know, you're not some super secret, you know, this is not, what you're saying is not that valuable. It's not that unique.
Well,
you're
think about it. You were QAnon-S, all right? You know, so.
But I wasn't to the person publishing me.
Oh, okay.
I was known. I wasn't tweeting out secret with a secret identity. Like, nobody knows who I am. That's what QAnon's doing.
How was your stuff published?
Everybody who wanted to know who I was.
They just didn't
and they
want
said,
to know.
You know. I just didn't put it in the newspaper. I don't think that's so QAnon strikes me as fake, in the sense that I think it's the drama.
To what side though? Is it,
yeah,
you know, some people pontificate that it was, to give the pissed off, Republicans conspiracy, you know, kind of draw them towards, moths to a flame and get their data and you know, who's watching whatever. And now we know the whatever did that. And then kind of control and make people think that, yeah, something's being done, you know, so don't worry about it.
Well, I think QAnon certainly serves in all those purposes, you know, data gathering. It serves in kind of beefing up the base and kind of helping them understand the stuff they see in the news when it doesn't really go with what they want. I mean, you know, most of them probably don't care about tariffs, but there's a lot of stuff Trump has done, which is the opposite of what he said he was going to do. And this QAnon serves serves in trying to explain it a little bit or show the people, don't worry about this. He had to do this because of this other thing. So, I mean, if QAnon is anything, it's run by his, it could very possibly be run by Trump's, you know, election staff. I mean, he's got a lot of people that it wouldn't surprise me that they would think this is useful. Or it could be run by the opposition in order to, but the people that believe it, the people that are following it are not people that demand real honesty in how they make their decisions. Because anybody that would, if I was going to go with what QAnon said, first off, I don't follow. I'm not interested if I don't know where the information is coming from. I need a sense of where did this come from? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the legitimacy of the source? I want to know that. So since QAnon is like, well, I'm just QAnon and I have a lot of followers and I say this because I'm on the inside, I don't have a sense of who that is. So I don't pay attention to what QAnon is saying. The people that are not like me or you who would pay attention to somebody they don't know and it's not identified, these are mystics. These are people that believe in magic, okay? And there's a lot of people that voted for Trump that probably believe in magic, okay? They may not call it magic, but they are people that will buy off on really shallow stories and think that that's real. This is not good, but that's who QAnon's audience is. I know many of them may think that, oh, I'm on the inside track, I'm getting good information. But the fact is because they don't know who it is, they have no idea if they're getting good information. So there's a certain category of the population which can be put into that. And they are kind of like
who are the trusted figures in this whole thing? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, got some tit, trust in Trump. You know, that's a big one. Anybody else in his circle? You got, I probably feel better about Melania than the whole damn mm-hmm. crew.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just look at who Trump trusts. And do I have any idea who those people are? And do I respect any of those people that he trusts? And this is my conclusion. He trusts people that he knows very well for many years and people that he loves. He trusts those people. And he chooses pretty well. Because two of his three wives, Melania and Ivana, quite brilliant women, you know, people who have done well for themselves on their own merits. They're independent, strong women. I can't say about his second wife, but he loves his family, loves his kids, like people do, like we all do, and so and he trusts them. And also, he's not intimidated by people. I think that's one of the things that makes him attractive. And also causes the elite to hate him so bad and the Democrats. Trump is not easily intimidated. I mean, obviously, it's an understatement of the year, but I mean, he doesn't look at you with your degrees and your past jobs and I'm friends with the Fed board chair and I'm friends with Goldman or I'm friends with all the Democratic leaderships and the big donors and you have to respect me. He doesn't do that. He respects you if he thinks you're worthy of respect. And if you're not,
do you
he
think
respect.
That's a lot, you know, to do with not just his character or history or any of this other stuff? Do you think it has a lot to do with the fact that he's a billionaire, that he's got the money, that he's not, you know, out looking to?
But there's a lot of billion. Well, yes, he does share. I've met a couple people. I actually met one real life billionaire in my life, and of course, he was looked like an average guy in a baseball cap. I think it's not so much about the money, but I think where he's at in life, he has a huge sense of satisfaction. Which
well,
we
he's
all
not having to worry
like
about
to
money. He's not out,
that's
you
right.
know,
that's
he's
right.
doing
and also, but
not fundraising every day.
The Bushes. Neither did Poppy Bush have to worry about money.
Yeah,
you didn't
true.
See him giving away his $400,000 salary. I mean, Trump, it's not about the rich. Some rich people never have enough money. Okay, Trump.
You know, is Trump giving up? I mean, in his tax bracket, he's probably like, you know, he's not giving up that much. You know what I mean?
No, he isn't. But the fact that he's willing to say,
yeah, I know.
I'm doing this, every president should have done that. They all talked about it. None of them did it until he came around. So I think he's not obsessed with money. I think he sees money like he does people. These are tools to get things done. Money is a tool to get things done. And certainly he's borrowed. He uses money to achieve his vision. He has gone, he has lost money and he's borrowed money and he's, I don't know the details on how many times, you know, he said, I've never gone bankrupt, but certainly
he's
has
renegotiated his debt.
He's renegotiated his debt. That's right, because money is a tool. It's not his identity. I think his identity is not associated with money. I think it's associated with his family.
You know what? Give you a good idea of how he kind of views money and dealing with. It's the second Atlas Shrugged. You know where was it D'Antonio? He blows up his own minds because all these guys are, they know they're mm-hmm. just going to follow him and invest in whatever. And he goes, mm-hmm. "Yeah, watch me break these guys, you know, because mm-hmm. they're so stupid yeah. that I can they'll say how much they hate me, but they're always going in and kind of, and I'll destroy them and boom and done." So mm-hmm. it's kind of, I'm getting the impression that he understands what's happening and he can play on it. And he's been inside the political apparatus of Democrats and Republicans and populism. And he's, you know, on television, he knows how to read a Nelson, mm-hmm. a Nielsen report and how mm-hmm. the demographics of the blah, 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 blah. And then Cambridge Analytica. Here it comes. And he took Google and Facebook and beat them over the head with their own weapon. And they don't like it.
No, they don't like it.
So on this media stuff, on this, you know, we are the free press. All of a sudden now you even got Cook getting an award from the, what was it, Anti-Defamation League, I think, or something, gives him an award. Yeah, we're gonna root out hate speech. You're not welcome on, you know, iTunes or something. And yeah. they're going to do the same thing with Facebook and Google and all. And at the first hour, we had a gentleman, a young guy named Noah, Decentralized Thought is a channel he has on YouTube, and he mm-hmm. does a really good job explaining crypto and all the different stuff that's going on there. And I'm going, yeah, I can see that the future is going to be privacy of none day business. They can't do anything about it.
That's right. But
what did
That's
we
right.
have just last couple of days? Department of Homeland Security comes out with a directive. We are going to be inserting code, and we want to make sure all this secret money is not so secret, and we can do forensic study of we know who's what. And I'm going, really? So now yeah. you have I've been commenting on this last few years. You go to all these crypto conferences, and they split into two. One is compliance. We're going to be GoldmanSucks.gov coin and over here and pick us. And then the mm-hmm. other one's not so compliant. We're just like, nah, we're going for privacy. And so what happens? You have a big giant war of, no, you're a bunch of money launderers. And it seems like this psychological projection thing. They're saying, you're money launderer, you're money. When that's exactly why they want government sanctioned GoldmanSucks.gov coin mm-hmm. with Uncle Sam and the Crown tapping you sure. on the shoulder with a sword, giving you fiat level of, we can do money laundering on an industrial scale
oh,
with
sure.
one push
yeah.
of a button, and we don't have to move a single pallet of $100 bills.
Yep. Yep, it's exactly where they're going with it. But technology supports the decentralized, it supports individuals. So that's good. That's good.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping that's what happens. I mean, I'm sure.
It will happen.
Sooner or later.
You know, seriously, you know, the vision, the arrogant vision of the elites in this country and other countries and the bankers and the true money launderers, which is governments around the world, you know, their vision is not connected to fundamental reality. It's not connected to humanity. And so it's going to lose. It's just not implementable. And I think they're getting increasingly desperate. I mean, some of the you know, the things you're not supposed to say now, you know, on or the things that Facebook says, oh, we're going to
yeah,
keep it clean.
Whatever.
Well,
yeah.
they're not keeping rap music clean. That's okay. You know, they're not keeping, they're picking on Christmas songs, you know, that's not clean, that's offensive to women, you know, baby it's cold outside.
Yeah,
you
know? I know.
But what about all the, you know, the stuff that's out there? So the average person of an average age, and certainly younger people who are very much like all young people, we listen to music, or I say we, I'm not young anymore, but, you know, listen to music and understand culture and pop culture and pay attention to it. They see all this for exactly what it is. And that's the future. The future is people that will have nothing but a wide-eyed awareness and contempt for the arrogant elites and the rules that they are putting on us. And, of course, liberty is the natural.
Oh, that brings us to Paris. 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 See, the reason we haven't done any of the breaks and everything, audience, is so I could trick Karen to staying on. Okay.
Yeah, well, I can only stay a little bit longer. I got stuff to do now.
I know. We're at the end of the live show here in about 15 seconds, but I'm just going to leave the music off because, you know, I trick you. you know. And that's what we're going to be doing. We have a new studio and new capabilities and new video, whatever. And we're going to be doing more of these long-form interviews without interruption. Because I think that, you know, we just get going and boom, here goes the commercial. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the reasons why, you know, in Terran Radio, they were always, you know, keeping it to one or two segments because you always had the interruptions. But this format, and Karen's certainly one of those that you want to have this discussion with. And my thing is that I'm looking at Paris. You know, if this isn't a neon flashing example of what can happen and how fast and how much. You know, and Macron to come out and go, well, we just passed a tax. It's okay. It's for global warming. You know, we're going to tax all your fuel and everything. And then what does he want to replace it with for this weekend? You go, hey, okay, we won't do the fuel tax thing, but I tell you, it's going to be a tax on the rich. How about that? We're going to do rich. And of course, he's going to define whatever the hell that is, you know. And I'm going, yeah, this socialism of Europe, how do you think this is going to play out?
Oh, well, I mean, once people have to start paying for stuff, socialism works great when other people pay for it. I mean, come on. It's wonderful. Who wouldn't love it? If you know, you get all this stuff for free. Somebody else is paying for stuff you want, and you don't have to work for it, and you got a lot more free time, and everything feels good. Yeah, but once these people have realized they're paying for it, well, they don't want to pay for it. Nobody wants to pay for it because they don't trust the people taking the money. They don't. I'm sure that many of them... just like in this country, have some concern with global solutions to global warming or climate change. You can't call it warming; it's climate change. But you know, a government solution to climate. It's one thing to talk about climate change and what individuals might be able to do or not do. But when the government comes up with a program, you know, most people aren't stupid. We've seen government programs before. A lot of evidence that probably it's pretty stupid, and probably some government bureaucrats and their business friends will get rich off of it, probably, you know, because guess what? That's what always happens. So you can't fool these people. These people aren't going to be fooled.
You know, I tell you, one thing that it sticks in my head, what I think is happening, is a good friend of mine's wife, she was all of a sudden, he's like, you know, buying land and building buildings and getting water and stocking up the sea container with, you know, Crown Royal, because he's going to be, you know, the saloon of whatever. And so he'd do all this stuff, and all of a sudden she got into it. You know, he'd been doing this for years, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years that I knew of, and all of a sudden she's into it. And I go, why? What happened? They make enough money that, you know, tax policy has an impact on them. And they go, and she goes, you know, I realized that it's never going to be enough. It's just never going to be enough.
That's right.
That's what's happening in Paris. They realized it's never going to be enough. They're going to go until you can't, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, that's true. And, you know, the people in Europe and France, I mean, they suffer high taxes already. They are mandated to have reduced working hours, and they pay for a lot of government already. So they're closer to their point of they can't tolerate it anymore than probably we are. And, of course, it's a smaller country with a lot of centralized control of a lot of things. I mean, the control that Europeans live under, that the French people live under by the French government, is way more control than we do in this country, even though we're totally burdened by too much government. They actually feel it on a daily basis, and they've accepted it. They've accepted it as a good thing. So now that they've got their gas and their heating cut back, and they're paying more for less heating, and it's cold, because guess what? Global warming. Oh, wait, no, climate change, because it's cold. This is a real problem. And it doesn't take much to get people apparently out on the street. Certainly in
urban areas.
All you
got to do is be not too hot, not too cold, not too wet, not too thirsty, not too hungry. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you could just, you know, kind of, I'm good over here, and you got a nice, warm, comfortable bed with your loved one there to do it. That, everything is towards that. Everything is nest to keep the ladybird there to be, and you kind of gotten, you know, making love and babies and kids are okay and not hungry and doing eyes at you. You do that,
and
you're good. You don't do that, things don't get good anymore.
That's right. That's right. And I'm sure that many, many governments, certainly, you know, in this country and other places, are looking at what's happened there. And they're going, what's happening there? You know, how did what happened? This is crazy. We didn't expect this to happen. But they know it. But it's happening. and they're going to realize the power of the people. And ultimately, when you want change, you do kind of have to get out on the street sometimes. You know, and it's much easier to get out on the street in an urban area.
You know, so a lot of the young guys that are successful or have, you know, options, and they don't have this patriotic, you know, nostalgia for America and the flag and all that kind of stuff. Around the world, they're just looking to find somewhere else to go. I'll just move because we can. Where's my pirate ship? I mean, you know, we're done.
Yep.
And we're talking to Alessandro Fasilo. Fasilo, he's an attorney in Italia and has an office in Germany and Spain. And he's going, look, man, he's an attorney to the wealthy of Europe, you know, let's keep our money kind of deal. And he has a vacation home on the Canary Islands. He travels to, Mediterranean. He comes to Arizona now and then, we hook up and what's up. And he's like, yep, Italy, it's done, man. They're out. This European, they call it Italian exit or whatever the hell is going on. And then you got Britain, whether they're going to do an exit or not, and who's lying to whom on that. And it's just, I don't see the end of by 2020 election cycle. I'm not seeing them looking to Europe as an example of anything, you know. And then you have Sweden that keeps going on, oh, a successful socialist country with national health care. I saw a documentary just a month or two ago, a guy did on that. And he goes, no, what they did and saved their ass is they kept their health care and they, you know, went anti-socialist. They, you know, we'll have these government programs and we'll put them up for competition and kind of. Well, they didn't have the special interest of the banks kind of stuff directing this. The people kind of came up with this amalgam of whatever the hell it is, but it's not the socialism that they're spouting all the time.
Right, because it doesn't work. Production. I mean, well, socialism, you know, it doesn't work. It doesn't even work. Ultimately, it doesn't work for governments that are socialist. I mean, you can only have a big fat, overfed government for so long.
No, it benefits the special interest of it went to us first. That's who it benefits.
Yeah. I mean, and that's not really sustainable because it's, and ultimately it's not sustainable because it's not just. And, you know, a lot of the language of the socialists is this will be more just, this will be more fair. In fact, it certainly isn't. It actually feeds.
When is it ever what they say?
No. And if you're taking other people's money and spending it, you're sitting there fat and happy on other people's money. That is immoral. Okay. And when you conduct things that are immoral, they are going to end up being unjust. They're unjust from the beginning. Soon people will all see it. And they do that. I mean, socialism collapses and there are criminals that were formerly politicians that everybody's after trying to string up. That's where socialism ends. poverty, starvation, and dead politicians. And it's where it should end up. But, you know, people don't really understand the whole story there. But that's where it ends up. And I will say any corrupt government ends up with heads on spikes. So,
well, how do you think it's going to be there? Your involvement with the Republican Party there, you're in a rural area, on the farm, and you probably be insulated a little bit, but what's their mood?
Well, we're losing voters. I mean, we're not getting young voters to say they want to be conservative. And I just sent an email out in response to something somebody said just for thought. And I said, look, if the Republican Party does not return to a party of constitutional law and liberty, they will never get new voters to be attracted to it, because that's what people want. They want liberty and they want justice. And they want, the only way you can get that is through the enforcement of good law. And the good law that we have some good law. If you want to, obviously it's an empire, not a republic, but let's say, you know, we don't get to secession into 1,000 different subgroups yet, 1,000 republics. If we can at least act like a republic, we can at least say, here's this constitution and let's read it and understand it in the way the founders meant, which was to be limited, or at least we assume that they did. And even if they didn't, it should be limited and we'll accept that as our premise. And then promote liberty and freedom in every way you can possibly do it. And you do it fundamentally by limiting government to the very key things that you think government should do, kind of like a minarchist might do it. But I said, if they don't take minarchy as a goal, they are liars, because they have, if you look at the Republican creed, certainly at the state level, they all talk about limited government. They don't mean it.
No, it's worse than
Young people don't care about hypocrisy. They don't like, they're not attracted to hypocrites.
Okay, let me tell you one thing that's going on here in Arizona. The weekend before you go, I want to get this in now. You brought it up. The weekend before the election, there was a gentleman representing Americans for Prosperity, which is a Koch thing, Cato Galore Institute here, blah, blah, blah. Then you had the guy that has been at, you know, and he and I going at it. And his name's Tom Jenny, and I'll say his name. He's a good guy. I like him. I consider him a friend, mostly because he doesn't lie to me. I mean, he may obfuscate the truth and kind of not, you know, whatever. But I'm not feeling that I'm getting, you know, too lied to. So at least he's telling me, you know, what's up and, you know, how they're and whatever. So I go, all right. The weekend before, he goes on to be a liaison, it looks like, to be the head lobbyist in the state legislature. We're going to get something passed and do. And the guy that took over, the state director of AFP here, Americans for Prosperity, the guy named Andrew, and he comes and speaks at our breakfast club, and he's all, yeah, got to get out there and vote. And vote no on this one constitutional amendment here in Arizona that was put up by, I think it was paid for by the real estate agents or whatever, because they knew that there is no taxes on services in Arizona. Well, they knew what they're going to do. They're going to tax, and a bunch of tax on taxes. So they go, oh, no. Vote no on that, because if we aren't able to have taxes on services, well, then we can't lower some of these other taxes we want to lower. And I'm going, what?
Yeah.
You got an entire section of we don't tax, and you... Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah, that's right. That's called hypocrisy. And you're not going to get new voters when you're open with your hypocrisy.
Okay, but why do you think they would do that? Why? What would be the reasoning, you think?
To be hypocrites?
No, that they want to have a tax on services. How would that benefit?
Well, think about what our economy does for a living. We're mostly a service economy. It's where the money is.
Exactly.
Why you rob banks?
So this is what happens. Goldwater Institute had Art Laffer on. We used to promote him on Freedom's Phoenix and go, and we get tickets and we go sit there and listen to their whatever. And Pal and I are there. And Tiger, and we're listening to them, and Art gets up and he does his Laffer curve thing, and he's talking about supply side, whatever, and we need to have it. And the point that he was making is that when you lower taxes, you get more economic activity and you get more money for the state. And I'm going, okay. Well, then he was like, and if you really want to amp up more money for the state, you lower taxes on a shitload of taxes on new ones that you create. You create this, you got to have the service, you got to have the income, you got to have this, you got to have your car, you got to have, you know, your taxes, you know, his bed, you tax his head, you taxes, I mean, you know, you tax everything, okay? Mm-hmm. But if you keep it a low enough percentage, then there's no incentive for people to spend the resources and the time and the effort to take away that one little tax, because it doesn't, you know, it's spread out and it's just worth the effort.
It's a strategy
for what? For the maximization of income to the state.
There you go.
So I get up. Oh, here's the punchline. I get up and I asked him a question. I go, me and Pal were up there. I go, what you're talking about, instead of maximizing the money that I keep and resources to me, you're talking about maximizing income to the state. And I'm going, why? You know, what is your goal? Why would you want to maximize income to the state? And he looks right at me and he goes, so we can spend it. This is Laffer, okay?
Oh, my
And I'm going,
Lord.
So then when you got the Americans for Prosperity, it's like a decade later, and they're coming out saying, and they're a full corporate, they added a guy. They're going down, holy crap, they passed this law in our state constitution by initiative, which makes it almost impossible for them to change it. And because you have a supermajority to even put up the whatever. Mm-hmm. So they're going in, and they're going to be what? Maximize more revenue to the state. Why?
Wow.
Because they want to spend it, dummy.
That's right. That's
you know, right. I am right. Like, this is so messed up.
Yeah,
and
I mean.
And these are the Koch guys.
Yeah. Yep. Well, yeah.
But Bill Weld.
Yep. It's a shame. It's a shame. And it's not going to really quit. And what this does ultimately is it drives people into the black and gray markets, which is why they have a war on cash and they want to track all the transactions, because people are avoiding these taxes because that's natural to want to do that. We're all serfs, you know, and periodically when the nobleman found out, you know, when the Lord found out that they were withholding and hiding some of their product that the nobleman wanted to get his hands on, periodically he had to go out and you know, burn down a couple of villages.
Yeah, lop off some heads,
to punish them. Yeah. But you know, we always, the people, there's way more of us than there is them. And you know, it's not sustainable, this continual, creating serfs out of people.
Oh, here's another one they did. Department of Public Safety is Highway Patrol. They put out a thing for our law enforcement and Department of Public Safety, and we're going to get, because we love you so much, we're going to go ahead and have this $35 per automobile fee, tax, whatever. Because here in Arizona, if you buy a new car, you may be paying $100, $200 a month in personal property tax. When you go do your car goodness. Registration, it's based the value, not the weight or not per or any of that stuff.
Ours is the same in Virginia, too. It's outrageous, yeah.
Well, how much, a new car, say you went and bought a $40,000 car,
$40,000, you'd probably pay $3,000 or $4,000 tax. But you have to pay that right up front. You have to pay that tax to the state when you register it, and you don't get to do it over time.
Is it you get all big one. Is there annual thing, a premium?
And then there's property tax, yes. And there's annual property tax that you pay to the county.
Yeah, see? Vehicle. So what did they do? They gave the Department of Public Safety, the Highway Patrol DPS guy, the ability to set this and to change it whenever he wants to. It's $35 today. And that was on, we would buy older cars and we didn't have to pay a $1 billion. We may be, paying, $100, $200 a year or something like that. And I'm going, all right, cool, whatever, scumbags. And then now they're going, oh, no. Now all the poor people everybody's got to pay on the number of cars. We're going to get some. And it's just like diesel fuel in Paris kind of stuff. But then what are they doing? Same thing. You have little taxes on everything. That's the goal. Yeah. That's the Laffer method.
Yep. There you go. That's bad news. But yeah, the battle continues. So.
Well, thanks for spending the extra time with me. I'm glad we got that.
Sure, good talking to you. Yeah, I got to get out of here though.
You got grandkids and dogs, man, and husbands and kind of and stuff. I don't mind the kids in there. That's what this is all about, man. You let them have their say. Yeah. Let them ramble.
it's all for them anyway, right? I mean, that's why we're doing this.
I am, and you are too. Thanks, Karen. Karen Kotowski.
Okay, good talking to you. We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.